Hello and welcome to Shelf Respect, the book podcast focused on both the craft and chaos of fiction. I'm Max McCoy. Joining me as always, actively evading Cyclospora, is Jimmy Golden and Aaron Moon.
Listen, I found lettuce that's not diarrhea lettuce.
Oh.
Gotham Greens and Blue Big Leaf Farm both came out and said, this is how we grow our lettuce so it can't get parasites.
Oh.
And I was like, and I ate one last night. So we'll see if I get diarrhea.
Can I make a confession?
Please.
We had Taco Bell last night. And
Aaron.
Yeah,
but they took off their, I thought they were not doing lettuce on their stuff.
Well, I thought they were too.
And
I also simultaneously forgot that we're not doing lettuce right now. And so I definitely had a Doritos Locos Supreme.
You think it had lettuce on it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Aaron,
I know.
Now, for people listening, like, this is in the midst of it.
Yeah, I
we
know.
Are in
it's
the
not
middle
great.
Of it.
I think it's going to be fine.
That's the American way.
That's the American
it's
way.
Be fine. Yeah. I don't have to wear a mask.
No.
Good.
We're going to hope our way through it.
During the recordings. I look forward to that.
I do like that you were like, Taco Bell, they are dotting their I's, crossing their T's.
First of all,
they have got this.
We have family Taco Bell twice a month, and it's an important part of our family culture. So,
and there's no like subbing that out for something else.
My culture demands it. Wow, it's getting worse. She goes.
Okay. Well, in this episode, we're not going to be talking about Taco Bell. We are going to be talking about the career and oeuvre of Emily Henry.
But before we do that, you guys, speaking of Erin, and can you travel with her when she has poop issues, which we have traveled with her when she has poop issues, and she's still a delight.
That's true.
So she is partnering with Common Ground Pilgrimages to do a pilgrimage, a trip to the Cotswolds in June of next year. And it's all built around the book Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell. Obviously a fantastic book. Maggie is an excellent writer, and it was made into a Oscar-winning film. And so she is going to be heading out. The fun thing about this is somebody asked me, why are you not going on this? And I said, pilgrimage is not my vibe. Because I do think there's a lot of meditation that has to happen, and I'm not good at meditating.
There's not a lot of meditation.
No.
There will be some walking.
Yeah. Scenic walks. I'm not a scenic walk
fair,
girl.
Fair.
But I think most of you listening, a lot of you are, you're hot girl walking.
Can I interest walking. You in falconry?
Listen, birds are dinosaurs mm-hmm. that should have died off in the Ice Age.
Okay.
So I'm not into birds
okay.
either, but I think most people are. I think most people are like, I'm sorry, is a falcon going to land on my wrist and I'm going to feed it a little worm? Yeah.
Can I interest that. You in maybe like a modern day forest witch?
Okay. I'm into that. Yeah. 100%.
Okay. Okay.
Like, I'm into this. So listen, you get daily class time with Erin. Erin's going to teach you things. That's so fun. There's even chaplaincy, but I'm thinking this chaplain's an atheist, which is actually my preferred
yeah.
chaplaincy.
It's,
what
it's
a spin
not
zone there.
Spiritual
I like that.
It's not spiritual. It's not spiritual chaplaincy.
Yeah.
It's like
or religious. It's not religious chaplaincy.
It's not religious.
It's probably
so so this is going to be, guys, do not miss this trip. She still has a few spots left, which she's weirdly anxious about for a trip that doesn't start for 11 and a half months. But
don't blow up my spot, Jamie.
I know. If you want to take the anxiety out of her feelings about this, we will put the link in the show notes. You can also go to commongroundpilgrimages.com. They actually have some amazing
yeah.
trips. Now, none of them will be as good as the Hamnet trip.
Obviously.
But they do all these trips based around books. So yeah. It's definitely something to look into
Very
no
cool.
matter what.
Very yeah. cool.
What a great idea. I went on this is not like a trip like this, but this is just like a guy trip to Montana where you're supposed to fly fish and like hunt critters
Elk?
In the field. No, it was like, it wasn't like gophers, but it was like gopher adjacent. I never did that. I just fished.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to do. But we also had a chaplain and like they served us like, you know, bourbon and steaks. And then the chaplain showed up and was like, I'm here to talk about the devil. And I was just like, oh, I thought
like,
it was about friendship.
And I wasn't ready. I drank too many bourbons.
Yeah. So hit him with that, Aaron. Be like, bam.
Listen, if you're listening and you're like, solo travel, I don't know. Like, because you can go with somebody, but like also, why you got to wait on your friends? Just do what you want to do.
Make
like,
new friends.
Make new
and
friends.
These are cool friends.
I've been on those trips where I went on a trip to London where I was like, hi, what's your name? Bree?
Yeah.
Great. Now I've stayed in Bree's house like 8 times. So
yeah.
It'll be amazing at a trip like this.
So
you can bond over
us.
Falconry yeah. and atheist chaplains.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm excited. This is so we're doing this deep dive. We were talking about wanting to get specific sometimes with certain topics. And as much as books are an obvious target for that, sometimes it's exclusive because either listeners or ourselves haven't read the actual book. So we wanted to pick an actual author and kind of deep dive them. So we are going to be talking about Emily Henry. Before we get into specifics, maybe we start off here and just talk about Aaron, what is your relationship to Emily Henry books? Like, what's your perception of her work? Just some general baseline stuff.
Yeah. So I've read one Emily Henry. I read Beach Read and I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was like,
she seems very defensive right now.
No. It's what I think about her. Like, my perception of her is like good times, inoffensive. Maybe we talk about some deeper topics than we would in like some sort of bodice ripper situation. Yeah. But I don't know, I feel like romance does a really good job of that now. So I don't know that it's particularly groundbreaking that she's doing that. But I like it. It's fine. It's good. I give it a 4 out of 5.
Let's cut that. Let's just cut that and make that the advertisement for this episode.
Can we, Madison, can we cut that out and send that to Emily?
Obviously, she's like a cultural juggernaut, and I'm happy for her. And she writes, it's good.
We should always make Aaron go first.
I hate it.
Well, I was trying to mix it up because Jamie was doing the call to action. So let's keep Aaron warm here. That did feel a little bit like the Lannisters just took over, and I'm the first peasant. And I'm like, my liege, I need my chickens, but I understand starvation.
I get you got. Situation here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would call that at what part of the backhand do you think that compliment was served, Jamie? Did you think that was full backhand?
That was served from the locker room. That's how far back that was. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's good. What about y'all?
What do y'all think?
What do you think?
What do you guys think? Okay,
so for me and my take on Emily, I love Emily Henry. I have read all her books, including one of her YA books, and I hate YA. But I've read all her books. I was introduced to her when the world was introduced to her, in May of 2020, when it was like, well, Tiger King's over. Is there any books to read? And we had a canceled live show that we were supposed to do in Seattle for Knox's book coming out on Black Square Tuesday. And so I read Beach Read, loved it. And I am not, contemporary romance is probably the most hit or miss subgenre for me of any of the subgenres. And this, I loved it. I've read all 6 of the adult fiction that she has read. I've watched the one adaptation that's come out. And I really like her a ton. I like her a ton.
Knox, what about you?
I'm very similar to you, Aaron. I read Beach Reads. It's obviously like not my go-to style or genre, but I was finding myself walking a similar kind of tightrope of like, it reminds me a lot of like, I go to the gym, right? There is any gym you go to, there's gym guy, right? There's like, I'm here so I don't die early,
right?
You know, gym guy is here because this is his dojo, and he has the gloves with the fingers cut out, and he's got the massive water thing, and he's doing the exercises where he grunts real loud. Mm-hmm. He has complete ownership over this place. Mm-hmm. And when I look at Emily Henry, I think of Gym Guy, and she owns completely this genre, and she's great at it. Outside of that, what's the evaluation like? Well, hopefully we can get there in a conversation, but there's that duality of like recognizing greatness, but also wondering in the larger scheme of fiction, how does she rank? Where is she at? Where does she gauge? So, that was kind of my big thought on her. Aaron, do you want to talk a little bit like about who she actually is?
Yes, I will. So Emily Henry is a millennial romance author with an absolute badonkadonk of New York Times bestsellers. She's had 6 consecutive New York Times bestsellers. 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025. Like that, like in order. Incredible. What a run. Jamie's going to deep dive the data on these books and the adaptations they've spawned. But like Jamie said, romance is not where she got her start. But so she was raised in, actually, Jamie, I think you'll find this interesting, your favorite location in America, the Ohio River Valley around Kentucky. You famously love that spot.
I love it so
much. You and George Washington love it.
Love it.
We don't need air here because of that river.
Because of the the wind off the valley. So I didn't know this, but she was raised a non-denominational Christian. She attended a Christian liberal arts college on a creative writing scholarship to study dance. And then she was like, I kind of like these creative writing classes. I don't think I want to dance anymore. I don't know what kind of dance she did. I couldn't find that. I would be interested. I feel like that's going to tell me a lot.
What if it was Irish dance?
I hope so.
Yeah.
She also did a writing residency at the New York Center for Art and Media Studies, which doesn't exist anymore, but did exist at Bethel University, which is a private Baptist college, very interested in that. So it doesn't sound like she has a lot of religious trauma. She was like, essentially, like, hope and optimism and the value of love. Those are the things that I took away from my religious upbringing. And then she talks about how, like, all of her friends were like, all I thought about was hell and how I was going to hell and the devil was going to get me. And she was like, I never really thought about that. So, like, I think it's chill.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I was like, congratulations to you. And so in the process of writing, she kind of figures out this thesis, which she says animates her all her plots, which is the world can be so terrifying and heartbreaking. And at the end of it lies death. But here's what makes it all worth it, which I think is a pretty good summary of her work.
Yeah, it is.
Her debut novel was a young adult fiction novel, The Love That Split the World. And then Beach Read was, of course, her novel in 2020 that was her debut romance novel. So that is Emily Henry in a nutshell.
You know, I take heart in that origin story because I feel like so many times it's like a writer and they graduated second chair from the Iowa caucus
Iowa.
I'm just like, okay, like that, that's an inaccessible person.
Yeah, not
but someone who went to school for dance and also creative writing and it was, I don't know, like the writing equivalent of DeVry or the University of Phoenix maybe.
Yeah.
And she's just like killing it. Like,
I know.
I love that.
That's
awesome.
Pretty cool.
I love it. The only thing is I have to keep telling myself as a reminder, she's 2 years younger than Taylor Swift.
Yeah. She's she's born in like 1991, I think.
Yeah. I don't like that.
That hurts.
So,
that
does
hurt.
It does hurt. Yeah. It sucks.
Okay, Jamie, you want to crunch some data for us?
Okay. You know, I love data. So she has sold since 2000. 12 million books.
Wow.
12 million. Okay. Aaron mentioned the books. The best selling was People We Meet on Vacation, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. We'll get to that and why it is. But Beach Read was her breakout adult novel. It spent 55 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
But the only one of her books that was never number one, like out of the gate, like what didn't debut at number one. Because listen, you know what was coming out when her book was coming out? The Four Winds by Kristen Hannah, The Midnight Library, Matt Haig, and Where the Freaking Crawdads Sing.
Oh, that's a tough,
that's a tough spot to blow up. You can't do it. The thing about numbers two is why, and it's one of the reasons I really loved her from the beginning, like as soon as I went and sought her out, because here's what happens, guys. We will tag an author in a post on the podcast, on Faith Adjacent, wherever, and I'll go find that, and they'll be a Pulitzer winner. And they've got 1,000 followers. And I'll be like, so you just don't make content here or whatever? Listen, that is not Emily Henry. Emily Henry has 680,000 Instagram followers.
Wow.
And she has 124,000 subscribers to her Substack. And because she is very engaged. Also, when I discovered her, she was very into pop culture. And so she loves talking about pop culture. I love that too. So I was very much connected to her. But her adaptations. So of those six adult novels, five were sold the rights. We got the first one, People We Meet on Vacation, 78% on Rotten Tomatoes, critic score 68%. I would give it a 68%. It was fine. I actually love the leads, Emily Bader and Tom Blythe, but it was not an adaptation for me. But that went straight to Netflix. And then in filming right now is Beach Read with Baby Bang's Phoebe Divner. Mm-hmm. Also does a lot of book adaptations. We love that for her. And then Patrick Schwarzenegger, which is the worst casting in the history of all casting.
Tough. So, very tough.
And we've gotten to watch Emily Henry have to go on TV multiple times and try to defend that casting. And she does not, because she doesn't, you can tell, she also doesn't like it.
She's like, trust the process.
Listen, and the other way we know she doesn't like it is she just announced this week of recording that she will not be selling the rights to her last book, and that she will be adapting it herself. With her own independent production. Like, now, is that a good idea? I don't know. She also is, for the other three, so Happy Place is going to film. That's J-Lo's production company. Happy Place is my least
great hands
ever.
There.
That doesn't feel awesome. Good.
I know. She's writing. She's now come in and announced this year, after people we meet on vacation 1 week later, she said, I'm going to write that script. I'm going to write that script, which I felt like was a hit at the screenwriter, which is funny because that's another author who is directing this current beach read. That felt like pointed that she's not into her anymore. Anyway, and then funny story, which is my favorite of all her books. She has already said, I am writing that screenplay. And then again, Great Big Beautiful Light, which came out last year. She's like, I'm going to just adapt that myself. I'm just not even going to sell
it. Y'all don't even worry about it.
You don't even worry about it. No. And so in terms of money, she rich. Like the richest of all the 35-year-olds, truly. And has sold a ton of books and has a lot of love. So she's been, by those standards, very successful. Mm-hmm.
She's doing okay. She's doing okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about like the scouting report on Emily Henry. And I really enjoyed this because I approached it like the NFL draft was coming up and she's a prospect. You wanted like, what are strengths? What are weaknesses? What are tendencies? Things like that. Because I think with sports, it's such a natural part of the conversation. With media, with entertainment, it is such an unnatural part of the conversation to the point I think it's detrimental because when you highlight highlighting someone's weakness doesn't mean they're bad. It's just recognizing what like the totality of who they are, creatively speaking. And I feel like there's more value there that we often are not talking about because we're either defending or prosecuting, like with that shrill kind of binary. And I think it's really interesting to look at people with a little bit more nuance. The kind of one line I wrote, and admittedly, I'm not as familiar with Emily Henry, so a lot of this is crowdsourced from the internet not generalized approximations of her stories. But there's a little bit of wiggle room in case I'm way off, but I had Nora Ephron meets Taylor Jenkins Reid with a little Aaron Sorkin dialogue. Right.
Yeah.
Because I think dialogue is so important.
That's good.
To a lot of her books and her stories in such a rich way. Observationally, it seems like she likes really contained worlds. She likes emotional, almost like fishbowls, you know, and she tends to not write the sprawling epic with tons of characters and tons of crazy things happening. I think it's a little bit more claustrophobic in a way that's actually really beneficial. I would argue that is now seems a little bit old fashioned compared to some of the romance or even the romanticy things we're getting now. Core tropes. I think she does a really good job of staying pretty similar while also creating enough diversity in tropes that it doesn't feel redundant, you know? So I think there's a lot of enemies to lovers. There's best friends to lovers. There's not enemies, but rivals to lovers, which seems to be a weird nuance, but I think it does apply. There's opposites attract kind of stuff. I think one of the things, I'm curious to see what y'all think of this. It's a very incestuous publishing book adjacent universes and characters. It's novelists, agents, editors, library, like it's all in that world. And it seems like she's taking Write What You Know pretty seriously, which is cool. But in general, how do you all react when you know a book is kind of up the butt of the publishing industry?
I like the context of it because it's the thing they know. And so you're not going to get a lot of, well, actually, when you split an atom, this is what I should have, you know, like in the reviews. But it also feels like you're getting a little insider tea without it being connected to the real Emily Henry. And so if she's being critical of, or if she's like, I always think of the way in Book Lovers, because the female main character is a literary agent and she's kind of a B word. I always think, is that your agent? Is your agent a B word? Is this a specific agent you're thinking of? Is this editor who's hot, but like taciturn? Is that also like your experience? So I'm a fan of it. Because what happens if you don't do that is you've got, a white lady being like, you guys, the help. Do you know how good it was?
Aaron, do you like white ladies writing about stuff they don't know about?
Yeah, super fun. I think, like, okay.
Wow.
The hands are up and out.
I don't know that this work has made much of an impression on me, like, in totality. So, like, I think it's great that that's where she's writing.
Yeah.
I just don't know that there's anything particularly interesting about it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, it's almost, locally respected within the genre, but not like critically. I mean, it is critically acclaimed in the literal sense of the word, but beyond this little region of fiction, does it endure? Is it like provocative intellectually? It seems like you're saying no, and I think
Because I think there's a lot of romance that does that really well, actually, and so to me, this feels like kind of the. I feel like I'm going to piss people off by saying this, and maybe I don't actually mean this, but it's catering to like a very, very wide audience, which is good when you are trying to sell a book, but also like, I don't know. It feels kind of like grayish. It's builder's gray for me. So I don't know. Like, I don't think
Do you want more publishing books where at the end the ghostwriter
no,
is a ghost?
No, I don't.
What you want?
But like, at least I'm interested. Right. At least like it made an impression on me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, and I don't like disqualify her from being a good writer because of that. Mm-hmm. I do think she's a great writer. And obviously, I'm not doing anything interesting with my life, so what the hell should I be saying?
Calm down. You can have an opinion that you don't like a writer without making yourself seem like you're bad.
No, I mean, it's just, I go, it's good. It is good. I just don't know that, like, being in the publishing industry or being in the writing world, like, brings any, like, new excitement to the story, I guess.
I agree. I'm okay with it from time to time. When it's always the set piece, I get a little annoyed because I'm just like, I want a little bit of more creativity. And I think if you had to dinger a little bit, I would say that is certainly a negative. I also think the setting, I really enjoy settings. And I like the opportunity for texture that it brings. And I often have found myself, in Beach Read, but it does also seem to be an element in her other books that I haven't read. It's always vaguely, it feels like a mood and a vibe, but with no specificity.
You know,
it feels like a nondescript vacation house or a nondescript lake town or a sleepy Michigan place. And it's just like, okay, I'm not from those places. Like, what does that mean actually? You know, like, give me a sense. Like, are you like, do your balls sweat from the humidity the second you step outside? Is like that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
I would appreciate something like that. But I think this might be a good time to kind of segue into our debate part of like trying to understand where she is in the spectrum of writing, because Aaron, I think you kind of are alluding to it a little bit. And the idea is like, is she good or is she good at her genre? Is she good at filling a market inefficiency or a market demand? In a lot of ways, some of the things I kept thinking of when I was thinking about her was, do you remember the SNL skit where it was like, what up with that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite.
It's Kenan and it's Jason Sudeikis, and Jason Sudeikis would like come in off the trampoline and just do the dance. I kind of feel like that.
It's
awesome and it's great. Probably a more generous and complimentary comparison would be like somebody like Chuck Lorre, who is an iconic TV show maker, but he makes a specific kind of show.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it will culturally always get the credit it deserves. It is incredibly successful and that does matter.
Yeah.
But it is a specificity of success. And I think that also does matter.
I think it's like, it's a solid bet. Like you put your money on this, you're going to get it back probably with a little more. And that's good. That is a good thing. So
yeah,
it's not bad. I think the Chuck Lorre is a very apt like comparison. I think that's good.
Okay, so if we're talking about her, if we want to consider her in the overall fictional author zeitgeist, I wanted to use the idea of like, is she a mirror or is she an engine? And the idea here being a mirror reflects culture back to us, to you, and an engine takes it somewhere it wasn't always already going. So Jamie, when you think about Emily Henry, is she a mirror or an engine?
She's for sure an engine. And here's why. She did not invent contemporary romance. It existed long before her, but she legitimized it.
Yeah.
She brought it into a scale where women felt like they could read these books now and not have to hide their covers. They didn't have, like, they could go and buy the book and be like, I'm buying this book, and they could feel good about it. Because her debut book coming out in May of 2020, combined with the atomic growth of book talk, it just fueled the capacity. And the reason I know that is true is because if you look at the past 20 years of romance, in the aughts, okay, you had, in terms of contemporary romance, you had like Sophie Kinsella, Jennifer Weiner, you had Harlequin, Avon, Kensington, like you had these mass market paperbacks and you had chick lit, right? And that's all you really had until, and really what shifted romance for so many people, readers and authors and publishing, is Kindle Direct Publishing. And so what happened is these authors showed up and they were like, oh, I don't even need a public, because trying to sell a book set in vague Michigan where two literary adjacent jobs like do it behind the bar, like that was hard to sell to Penguin Random House, because they were like, oh, I'm sorry, we're doing only literary fiction and thrillers. Like, that's what we're doing. And so you end up with people like all these authors started as indie publishing. Colleen Hoover, Tessa Bailey, Christina Lauren, Lucy Score. These have sold hundreds of thousands of copies of books and made a ton of money. And so what that ends is it all lands on Emily Henry, who comes in and goes, I can actually be a little more literary than Lucy Score. Mm-hmm. I can actually bring a little bit of some trauma. Someone's going to have trauma here. Let's unpack it a little bit. Let's have sexual tension. And also, let's be actually funny. Like, let's make rom-coms, because we're not making rom-coms in film anymore. What if we have rom-coms be in our books? And then she also became an engine, because she was like, you know what I'm going to do? Write a book every year. And I bet you B-words are going to have to start doing the same thing.
Yep.
And they all had to do it too. Like, they all had to come correct.
It like kind of changed like the whole industry.
It changed all of it. And it changed the industry, which I know we'll get to. Even the very covers of her books transformed. So to me, even though she is, I mean, listen, Chuck Lorre, also an engine, right? Whether it produced a lot of other good cars or not, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't necessarily that it did that, but it makes a lot of people happy, especially when it's like, I just don't know that I can read another book about World War II.
Yeah.
I just can't do it. And so they just go, I just want to go to vague Cincinnati on the Ohio. Like, I just want to go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Erin, mirror or engine?
I almost said, like, I wrote down almost something exactly that Jamie said. Like, I don't think Emily Henry was the first author to marry, like, a decent sex scene with emotional heft, but I do think she made it mainstream, and I think she made it cool and okay. I do think it's interesting. Beach Read comes out in 2020, which means she probably started writing it around the middle of the first Trump administration. And I think it's interesting to have, like, this very sexy feminist man that's still dark and broody, so he's believable, up against like this national narrative of grabbing him by the and I moved on her like a bitch. So I feel like it's like it's like kind of mirror and image a little bit, but like reverse mirror. Like I it's like the mirror of Erised in Harry Potter, where it's like, this is the thing I want to see in the world. I'm going to put it out there in the world. But I do think, I mean, everything Jamie said was right. And she knows so much about the history of romance. I think you get like neatly solved problems, but the romance part, like the emotional narrative is more complex. So it's like, they're still like, they're fully formed humans and they have like an emotional side and a logical side. I think she made that cool. And I think she's singular in that arena for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a little complicated, because I agree with everything y'all are saying. I think a lot of times when you think of mirror or engine, it's like this person is they would have succeeded in this effort at any point in history. Mm-hmm. It's like not the great man theory of history, but it's a version of that, like a great author in history. I think she almost feels like a symptom or reaction that became the cause or the engine, you know? So I don't want to deny her any credit, obviously, but I do think it almost feels an element of perfect timing, you know, of this mm-hmm. specific moment where there was a need for this. I feel like she capitalized, because it's not like she was, which y'all already said, she wasn't the only one doing this. I think she was doing it at a rate, pace, and scale, and tone that mm-hmm. really resonated, where I don't know if it's like a Rebecca Searle didn't as much, or maybe she just couldn't keep up the speed at which Emily Henry was doing it. So she deserves her credit. I don't know if this was 20 years ago or 2 years ago, if the same thing happens, but it happened when it happened. So she deserves credit for that.
You know, there, executive at Simon Schuster said about that we are in the Emily Henry era. The 20s were the Emily Henry era when it comes to, and he said, she writes smart commercial romance.
That's, yeah.
And I thought that's it, because, and it's like what you're saying, it's a mass audience of Chuck Lorre. It's the Big Bang Theory of it all, but it's also smart, witty, like it's got more depth, and it changed a lot of people's minds about romance, which I know we'll get to, but it changed people's minds about like, oh, this isn't a, not everybody, because some of y'all still out there acting like anything but literary fiction is trash, but it changed a lot of people's minds about like, oh, okay, well, this is okay to read because it's not a paperback at the grocery store. Right.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's an important part of the conversation, because it feels difficult to compliment Emily Henry when you also want to say like, hey, she's not trying to do the same stuff as if it's a literary fiction book, like she's not doing the same thing as All Fours. Those are different things.
That's right.
And they're different books, so they can't be evaluated similarly. But Emily Henry isn't doing that. And that's not a negative. That's just a realization of what she's doing. But at the same time, I think what Emily Henry is doing is she should be complimented for her success, but I think there's a realism of like, there's a degree of difficulty that she is not aspiring towards, and she doesn't have to, but it's also not the same thing.
Yeah. Like she's in the pocket, and she's really good in the pocket.
Yeah.
And like, that's, we need people in the pocket. So it's good.
I wanted to ask y'all, do you think she is maybe not singularly responsible, but do you think the era of Emily Henry is directly related or instructive in the rise of romanticism, of taking it to both a different level in terms of setting, scale, and spice?
I think contemporary romance is a gateway to romanticism, as opposed to fantasy being a gateway to romanticism. I think that with fantasy, fantasy readers are very, very dismissive of romanticism, like quite dismissive. And I say that as somebody who is sometimes quite dismissive of romanticism. But then with romance readers, they go, oh, no, wait. Now, instead of sleepy Michigan, we got dragons.
I can go to Lord of the Rings and we're going to bone.
Okay. Let's do it. And I think it is. So it's like there's also a Sarah J. Maas era, who I would say Sarah J. Maas is the to romanticy as is Emily Henry to contemporary romance at the same time. And it's just a perfect storm of now both of these can grow. Because I think you would hear, I would be curious from the listener. I think a lot of people are like, yeah, no, I was already reading fantasy. I read romanticy. And then I was like, oh, what's over here? I might can do that. Because sometimes they can be very divided. Like some people can get very much in their lane and they're like, I only read about real people in Montana right now. Like I only like PEI. Is Carly Fortune in PEI? Let's do it. And then other people are like, no, I don't want real life illustrated. I don't care about people in love in 2026. I don't care about it. And so I think there's a lot of crossover there for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask in this vein of debate, do we think, and I think this relates to the mirror engine kind of conversation, could these books have been written by someone else, or are they a singular part of, who she is and like how she writes?
Well, I would argue her books have been written by other people.
Yeah.
Abby Jimenez writes these books. Carly Fortune, aforementioned. Sarah Adams is trying. I'm not a huge, I feel about Sarah Adams the way Aaron feels about Emily Henry. And so, and so I think they are trying to do it. Like I, and I think they're doing a unique thing too, but they get success
because of her.
Because of her.
It's almost like she's Taylor Swift and they're the Tay daughters. And yeah. So it's like, her rise only helps them rise. But I don't know that if she hadn't been there, that they would have risen as high.
That's the hard part about, I think, being so connected to a genre, whether it's romance or anything. The idea is like, could this, like the if you do the subtraction test of history, could someone else have done this? Is this someone who could have replaced or approximated? Yeah. When you're a genre writer, 100%. Mm-hmm. It opens up much more when you're not specifically being evaluated in genre. So that's probably a little bit unfair. But I do think there, I don't know exactly what the special sauce is that she has, but there is a little bit of like salt chef guy who used to sprinkle
Salt Bay.
Thank you. There's a little Salt Bay to what she does, and I can't identify it, but I think it does differentiate at least 10% from some of these other writers who are also very good and competent, but they're not Emily Henry.
Well, and even she has tried, and I'll be curious what her next book is. She's writing 3 screenplays, so we're probably not getting another Emily Henry book for a really long time. And she's talked about this year that I'm in a writing cave, but not a book. Like she's writing screenplays. And so, but her last book, Great Big Beautiful Life, was an attempt to do historical fiction slash romance. Mm-hmm. And she was like, again, everybody's a writer. Back to what you said, one of them's a Pulitzer Prize winner, journalist. And so, but they go in, and to me, that's when she, because I think now we're pivoting a little bit to the, what's Kennedy Ryan writing? Like, maybe this isn't just a beach and there's a dog on the cover. What if there's something different happening and there's a more, it's actually much more complex. The spice is still good. We still like the tension, but we're actually telling a much more interested character focused story rather than just neat tied up with a bow. And so I feel like she attempted that with Great Big Beautiful Life. Like she tried to go, no. And listen, I've never seen an author warn readers more than this woman warned people about this book. Hey, I'm doing a little something different.
Everybody just called.
But I'm going to be honest. It felt like when Carrie Underwood is like, now my face is going to look different because I fell on the sidewalk. And then when she came out, you were like, you kind of look the same. You just had, we can tell you had plastic surgery, like, but not because of your fall. That's what it felt like. When I read Great Big Beautiful Life, I was like, no, this is still the formula. We just went back in time a couple times. You know,
do you think it's like the accessibility aspect of it, of like it's a good entry point for it's a good read for your book club. Like everything's chill. You're not going to get, no one's talking about the C word. Nobody's like licking nipples. So it's like just chill.
Oh, now they look nipples.
Well, you know, but like it's not crude. It's not nasty. I think that's a part of it too. It's like it's just on the edge of being titillating to the point where it's like, okay, yeah. Like you're probably not going to recommend it to your mom, but you can recommend it to your older neighbor, kind of a situation. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel
you
like
just
there's
described
like
young Sheldon and Nate Bargatze.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Are
exactly.
Great examples, but also scary examples, right? Which, Jamie, to your point about her newest book, has the response been positive? Has it been like mitigated a little bit because of the change in style?
It was a little tepid at the beginning because people were like, now this, I mean, this is fine if you need to like wander off a little bit, but I don't want this to be the norm.
You need to come back.
You're going to need to come back, and we need to be at the Outer Banks doing something. You
know? See, I hope she doesn't do that because
I think she won't.
This is smart.
I think she gets nervous because I think she also is like, oh my God, am I Sheldon? Like,
yeah.
Because I do think she's savvy enough and young enough and chronically online enough to be like,
Which is
why she maybe took back the screenwriting and her own adaptations, because she was like, even if I don't ever adapt this, y'all aren't going to do this again to me. Like, I did not love all of this, like what you have done.
But I do think I hope she stays with it. And the worst thing she could do is stay to the template and the formula. of how I'm doing this, because now you're James Patterson or now you're Law and Order SVU. And I think she's good enough that she can iterate upon and slowly expand the borders a little bit mm-hmm. and still feel creatively ambitious and like not dead inside at the kind of stuff she's writing, because she's not writing to satisfy an audience. She's writing and her audience is trained to adapt to whatever she does because she's just really good at writing.
They'll go along with her.
Yeah,
that's wherever exactly she right. is.
Do we think someone is on her corner, or do we think she stole a corner, or like in terms of the drug trade lingo that I've learned from The Wire, there are right. corners that belong to people, that's and right. you either get yours stolen or you steal someone else's. So how do we feel about that?
Listen, I do think right now the two people that I would say are coming for her ilk is BK Borison and Allie Hazelwood.
I agree.
Because ooh, both of these, because Allie Hazelwood is like, oh, you want trauma and hotter sex? Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
We like, got it.
I got it right
Don't
here.
Worry. We are going to say the C
and
word.
The romanticy, and truly the romanticy has made it so that people want more spice. Mm-hmm. Mm. And because the romanticy, like, my woman, my chair. And you're like, oh, okay. I don't know what that means, but it's very interesting. And then I think with BK Borison, she's doing the rom-com and she's like, you know what I'll give you? Nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make this like Sleepless in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have a whole series dedicated to books, dedicated to movies. You into that? And people are like, we're into it. And so,
and it's good.
And it's really well written. And both Allie Hazelwood and BK Borison are like, oh, you write one book a year? Oh, that's sweet. I write two. Mm-hmm. I write two and I do them in different genres.
Two's too much. You need
two's
to chill.
That's even max. Agree. Two's too much.
That's max.
But I do love when we get Sex Ghost from BK Borison. I yeah. do love it.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you guys. I put this in the rundown and this is a complicated statistical idea, but I feel like it's worth our conversation here, especially.
Who do you think he did that for?
Me. Aaron, hold on to your butt.
If we're going to talk about other authors, which I think we are, and deep dive them, it feels like we need to have a standard to compare them to. So as someone who does enjoy the sports ball, there is a stat that always shows up. In baseball, it's called WAR, and it's wins above replacement. In basketball, it's called VORP, and it's value over replacement player. And the idea here is that this is a stat that measures you not against like zero. It measures you against the most mid average player. Okay. Yeah. So I thought that would be helpful for authors too, because there's a kind of component there of like, we're not comparing Emily Henry to someone who self-publishes like on Amazon and has like one review. We need to compare Emily Henry against that mid-tier author who it's decent prose. There's some good trope work. And maybe you could see someone reading it on a plane. That's like replacement level. So what we're trying to evaluate is how far above replacement level of mid-tier of medium is Emily Henry and any other future author that we evaluate. So does that feel like it makes sense?
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel confident about this math equation.
Yes.
There you go. And it's simple numbers, simple ideas, right? So mm-hmm. yeah. what we're going to do is we are going to evaluate. We've got, I think, four categories it's craft. Like, do they write good shit? It's conversion, and it's trying to measure their ability to convert non-readers to readers or non-genre readers to their genre. There's degree of difficulty, and there is personality. Because I feel like personality is an underrated part, and I feel like now, especially more than ever, mm-hmm. it's such an important aspect of who these writers are. Oh, yeah. Do they get in their own way, or are they completely like a recluse? Like, is this a J.D. Salinger situation to their detriment? So those are the things we're going to evaluate. Our scale is zero is average. Two is fine. Four is good. And seven is God mode eliteness. Now, okay. You can be anywhere on that range for any of these categories. You can be a 1.5. You can be a 1.3 repeating, whatever. I don't care.
Okay.
Like, whatever. You just got to explain, like, why do you think the thing you think and how are you scoring them? So, Jamie, do you want to kick us off in terms of the craft category of yes. do they write good shit?
Okay. So when I'm thinking about the stat, I'm thinking about, you said average, right? Average author. The average author is really not talented. And so that's my experience. A lot of crap gets published every Tuesday, you know? But I also go, if I compare her to all authors, I'm going to give her a 3. But if I compare her to all romance authors, I'm going to give her a bonus point to a 4. Because if I stick within that genre, then to me, she is better than most romance writers. And so I am going to stick with that as my stat. So for me, it's 4. If you look at her Goodreads scores, you know, nothing really falls below 3.8. And it's People We Met on Vacation, and it is the worst of her books. And, so to me, and again, we're talking about 2 million ratings, 1.5 million ratings.
Yeah,
I think for what she's doing, I stand by a 4. I do.
Okay, so 0 to 7, you went 4. Aaron, where do you land on that scale?
I think it's enjoyable shit, it's happy shit, and so if 2 is fine and 4 is good, I'm giving her a 3.
You're giving her 3. Okay, yeah. I landed 3 as well. I put that I like her prose. They are clear and simple, but they do hold your attention, because I think it's such a fine line of like, this is so simple. Why am I reading this? This could be like a terms and conditions thing, but there has to be a little bit of razzle dazzle to where I'm like, I'm in the hands of a capable author. I will continue. You know, I think dialogue is really good. I also think some of her narrative stuff and plot resolution, you could see from space with the naked eye. So I'm a downgrade for that. So I'm going to go 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah, 3.5. So Aaron's the lowest.
Yeah. Wow. Aaron. Madison, cut that out too and send it to Emily, please. Jamie, where you land on conversion?
Okay, so I was thinking, like, converting non-readers to readers, I actually think it's easy peasy. Like, because if you go to a perimenopausal woman who has not let her HRT kick in, and you say to her, hey, you want to escape for a little while from the world in your empty nest? Guess what?
Yeah.
This is a woman named Emily Henry, and she will make you feel real, real good for 2 days, right? So that, I think, converts. Non-genre readers, I think she's very easy to suggest as a romance reader because of 2 things. You've got a little bit more literary fiction in the writing style. It's light, but still there. And the spice. I went on romance.io to look and see what all her books are on Peppers, and they're all 3. That is a perfect, because you can tell somebody, you'll know when it's happening. Mm-hmm. And you can just skip past it if you don't like it. I don't know why anyone would do that in the history of ever, but okay. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's not your thing.
Sometimes it's crass and crude.
It's fine. It's crass and crude. Put that on my tombstone. Like, I love it. But I do think, now, does she convert like a Sarah J. Maas or Rebecca Yarros converts? No. Like, I've never seen people become readers for ACOTAR in ways that I've never seen them become readers. And so I'm going to give her a 5 on this as well. I do think she does a really good job of this.
5. Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron, what you got?
But she's not winning I mean context of, like, she's not winning a Pulitzer. So it's not somebody going, well, I got to read Trust by Hernan Diaz, because that's how Calvin Turner met Dua Lipa. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. I'm also giving it a 5 for a lot of the same reasons that Jamie said. I think that it's a zero entry pool, which is, it's easy access. And you're having a good time and you're enjoying yourself. So, it's not going to do something, I agree, like Rebecca Yarros or a Sarah J. Maas. But I do think that it is encouraging reading, especially if you haven't read in a long time. I think it's an easy access point.
I'm actually going 7. I'm going full 7, and that is because I think a lot of what you both have said, she is the perfect entry point for someone who is a lapsed reader, for someone who has never read. It's inoffensive enough that they're not off put to stop, and interesting and creative enough that you think, this is kind of a good book, I'm gonna keep reading this. And I think that for the Rebecca Yarros or Sarah J. Maas, I think she's like the kid in 6th grade who says for the first time, and you're just like, oh, we cuss here? And like, it's the gateway of like, we can say other words now. I think she, obviously there are people who are like, no, I just want horned up stuff, and that's what I'm reading for, and they parachute right in. But I think Emily Henry, she is the one who gives permission. And I think too, I put a lot of value on the amount of pitches and like blurbs that either reference her name, or when someone's talking to an agent or a publishing house, they're like, it's Emily Henry, but like, blah, but in a warehouse, you know? Yeah. Emily Henry, but Fight Club. And I feel like it is being used everywhere. I would read
that book, by the way. Somebody write that.
Somebody do it.
So a 7 for me. Jamie, where are you at on degree of difficulty?
Okay, so this is where I am going to be the outlier. I do believe in the group. We'll see. But I feel like this is where it's hard because you're like, where are they on the spectrum of formulaic versus avant-garde, right? Mm-hmm. I think in romance, what is difficult is romance by its very nature as a genre is just like mystery thrillers. They're formulaic by nature. It's built into the way you cannot be avant-garde in these. Mm-hmm. And you wish you could, but you can't, right? You have to have a story with relatable, interesting protagonists. You have to have fun, quirky side characters. You have to have sexual tension. You have to have a classic trope that is honored. Like you mentioned earlier, enemies to lovers, fake dating. That's my favorite one. Funny story, fake dating. And you have to be a romance writer, you have to have a happily ever after. Mm-hmm. There is no room for a weird ending. You're not allowed that in the genre. It can't be a ghost, you guys. Unless it's P.K. Morrison, okay? But so I'm deducting points from the 7 because it is romance and it's just built in that it has to be that way. But I am adding points because in the last 10 years, like it's really stunning. If you look back, let's say 20 years, the number one best-selling genre was thrillers, followed by literary fiction, followed by romance. And now it's literary fiction has fallen off to number 6. That's how far behind, because we have become so connected to mysteries, thrillers, fantasies, science fiction and historical fiction both pulled ahead of literary fiction. They're still prestige driven, but they are not sales driven at all compared to these other things. And so for me, the degree of difficulty is really just competition. You're not competing against Demon Copperhead, because nobody could write Demon Copperhead but her, right? Like she is singular in that way. But for Emily Henry to stay ahead of all these competitive women who are like, oh, I can do it. Second grade teacher lives next door to the guy. Like I can do it. Listen, Aaron and I know me more than Aaron even, I've read a lot of bad romances.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of bad romances and Emily Henry does a great job. And so I am giving her a 5 on this.
A 5. Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron, what about you?
You kind of turned me around a little bit, Jamie. Like, I mean, I was going to give her a 2 because I mean, as far as romance goes, we're not like dabbling in Brechtian or Dadaism or anything like that. Like, and that's never going to happen. Otherwise, like one of your people is a ghost and none of this was ever real. And that's what's happening. Like, that's not how we do this.
Yeah.
And so, I'm going to give her a 3. I'm going to go up 1 point because Jamie convinced me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's because I've read all 6. Like, that's the only reason I can talk about it that way. Yeah.
I think, Jamie, you made the case for my score by talking about how she is a genre writer. And there are things, like there's a Mad Libs you got to hit and you got to do these things. And I think even to the point of the romance genre, like the genre flip of like literary fiction has dropped and these other very highly identifiable genres have endured and risen. And I think that's a direct result of... I think we have difficulty holding art with friction in our minds. And we're just like, I just want to do a thing where it's like, I know this guy's got cargo pants on and he's about to kick some ass. And I love zombie movies like that. I love, you know, cargo pant all-stars like that. For that reason, I'm giving her a 0. And it's not about her.
Right.
It is about the genre stuff. There is not a lot of room to iterate. And it doesn't pay to iterate. She's just learned that by going a little historical fiction and people freaking out a little bit. She's not incentivized to do it. So why should she do it? So it's not a criticism, but I do think like whether it's thriller, whether it's romance, whether it's insert your own genre, it can feel a little karaoke or it can feel a little cover band. And I think Emily Henry happens to be a cover band that sometimes better than the original, you know, in some of the stuff she does, but it is a cover band. And I think you got to get dinged for that. So,
I will say, I think that can be a fair assessment for sure. I always think, could Emily Henry write The Road? No. Could Cormac McCarthy write Book Lovers?
No.
Also, no. Like, but not at all.
I want to live in an AI universe where we get both attempt and I get to see who did a better job.
No, I would like to see that. So if someone could work that out for us.
That's a great use of AI. Don't act like it's not. You know?
That's fair.
Okay, Jamie, wrap us up here with personality. What's your score?
Oh my gosh. Listen, for all the
we spend so much time each week talking about, so when can we talk about this problematic author and this problematic author? There's so many authors who are either wildly problematic because they do not know how to interact with human beings, or they never interact with human beings. And they're just like, my work is my interaction.
My voice.
Like, okay, we're great. That's great. Or they're Delia Owens and they're killing people in the bush.
Allegedly.
You know what I mean? Allegedly. But so I'm giving her a 7 on this. Here's why. She's engaged. She shows up in all the spaces. She shows up even when the spaces are awkward. And she's like, I do trust the director of this film and my reader. She cares very much about my readers. She builds community around her books. Listen, I hate this, but she's pretty. She's very classically pretty. That's shiny blonde hair. Mm-hmm. She has perfect skin. She looks great in everything she puts on. She wears weird clothes and you're like, she's a stunner. And clickbait, like, and listen, being messy sometimes can be an advantage as an author because clickbait words. I mean, I think of Carol Claire Burke. She's a messy content creator on TikTok and she doesn't apologize for it. And guess what? Yesteryear is probably going to be the number one bestselling book of the year at the end of this year. But she's great on camera. She's great in talk shows. She's great at book events. She supports a lot of literary festivals. Like, to me, it's just, she adds a lot with her, like her whole commercial appeal. It's there. Like, you don't get nervous if you're Fox Studios going,
what's she gonna
say? Are we gonna be able to put her in front of a camera? Whereas I'll be honest, Allie Hazelwood, sometimes you're like, okay, mute that mic. She's too Italian.
Yeah.
You know, and so 7.
7. Full blown 7. Okay, Aaron, what about you?
I'm gonna give her a 6. I think she seems chill. Like, she's like, I don't talk about my husband. He didn't sign up for this. Like, I'm not doing that. They're trotting her out to fix to fix casting problems. I mean, I agree with everything Jamie said. Like, she is in a world of authors who put their foot in their mouths often. I can't think of an instance when she's done that. And I think it's the whole, like, yes, I am pretty and inoffensive, and I'm like kind of quirky in a cute way. Like, she's got a really, I mean, she puts things in an interesting light, I think, when she gets interviewed and stuff. So yeah, she gets a 6 from me.
I almost wish she wasn't our first one because I think she's such a exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Because you usually are getting a recluse or you're getting someone who is so messy that it's like, it's disadvantageous to the prospect. But I landed on 6.77 repeating because for everything you guys are saying, like, she's not a recluse because she's active. She's got a ton of followers on Instagram, huge Substack, like Jamie mentioned. But she manages to be involved without it feeling weird or too involved. But it's also not too passive, and it's also not like resentful. You know, it reminded me a lot of like how Zendaya does movies, like does press, where she participates. She's interesting. She's invested, but she's not weird. She's not messy, or she's not like dismissive. It's a weird balance to strike, and she does it really, really well. And she can be trusted to sell, and she can be trusted to have the studios back, even though the casting choice might be trash. And instead of opining about that openly, she just course corrects through different decisions for the next projects instead of just like openly on it. So I'm really impressed with her.
You know, the other thing about her too is it's like she meets every generation where they are. So like, she's like, I love Taylor Swift and I have a middle part. Gen Z, I'm only a couple years older than you. Don't you like me? And then millennials is like, oh, you guys, millennials, I love NSYNC and I hated wearing low rise jeans too. But also when she'll do like a reel at home, like I think her husband's name's Joey. Like, that's ridiculous, right? But she'll do a couple of TikToks every so often or like reels, and she's always wearing glasses at night. And God, don't we love a person who like can look stunning on the Today Show, but also has an astigmatism.
Messy bun and some glasses.
We love it. And I think she has really like found that perfect balance, and she counts her money every night.
Absolutely.
Listen, Ashley wears glasses at night, and she has convinced herself that she looks like Robbie Hoffman when she wears her glasses. Next time y'all see her, just be like,
listen to me.
You look like Robbie Hoffman. Is anybody?
Your wife is literally the hottest person
person we know in real life. What are you talking about?
Girl, with your you wife. Don't look like Robbie Hoffman. But
in no universe, like in no alternate
Robbie
universe.
Robbie Hoffman would say that Ashley is hotter than Gabby. And yeah. they're married.
I agree. I'm just like, you're demented. You're a demented person, but it's funny. It's funny. Okay, let's go. Last topic here. Let's go future. Where in 2046, where will Emily Henry be? How will we consider her? Like, I'm thinking, like, if you can, like, give a comp to another author's career of how we think she'll be seen or perceived. Erin, what did you have for this?
I think, like, for me, she's going to be seen as, like, sort of the Nora Ephron of the literary world. Like, you're making great movies. Like, everybody loves them. Nobody hates them. And they are a good time. I think that's exactly what she's doing. I don't know that I have, like, a comp for, like, an author, but I do think she is filling a space that used to be filled with rom-com movies that were now, as Jamie said, we're now filling with rom-com books. So I think it's a Nora Ephron of the lit world.
That's a good reference. Okay. Jamie, what about you?
So when you mentioned James Patterson early, I was like, oh no, I hope it's not James Patterson. Like, I don't want that to be, you know, where somebody's ghostwriting under the name Emily Henry, right? But I actually think she, and to me, the literary reference is John Grisham. Because when John, I remember reading A Time to Kill in high school and being like, what is this? This is amazing. And then following it with The Firm, I followed it right up with The Firm. And I was like, this is great. And I will say that it was suddenly like a lawyer writing about law. Mm. It all felt like it's in the genre of what he knows. And then it was just literary enough that it wasn't just quite the thriller mystery that was just gory. And it's like people were like, oh, now have you read that John Grisham? And everything gets adapted into a movie. And John Grisham, you know, he sold 300 million books total, I was looking at today, which is crazy. And he's still publishing books. And John Grisham would also say, listen, yeah, I know my lane. I've stayed in my lane. I have built Little League stadiums for 47 teams because that's what I'm passionate about. And I give away a lot of money, and I'm not embarrassed that I'm John Grisham. I think Emily Henry will be that. I think she will go, yeah, I'm not embarrassed that I'm Emily Henry. Like, other people get to win Pulitzers, and that's great, but...
But I'm Scrooge McDucking into my money. Yeah, so, like, exactly. That's good.
That's exactly right. So
I know I've told you guys this before, but when I was a senior, or when I was going into my senior year as a junior, we played summer baseball, and we played in Virginia, and we played... It was rumored to be John Grisham's... stadium complex, like his field. And my mom went to the concession stand and was like, and she's a huge reader. And so she knew John Grisham. She was like, sir, you look like John Grisham. Are you John Grisham? He was like, no, I get that a lot. And listener, it was John Grisham. Working the concession stand at his own field.
I love that.
It was really cool. So cute. I'm going to go, while we talk, I want you guys to tally up your total Vora score so we can be on the record about it. But I think I'm the same as both of y'all. I don't really have anything super innovative. I had Nora Ephron. I did. I didn't even realize how much more control she was taking over her scripts, Jamie, than what you had cited. So that both validates, but invalidates my analysis because you've already said it. But I can see her. No, it's good. I can see her being like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to write scripts now. I'm just going to be like Nora Ephron, but I'm doing scripts and I'm not really messing with books anymore. And maybe even directing. I don't know. I could see that because I feel like she has a really good sense. And to your earlier point, I do feel like a lot of her primacy is related to the dearth of romantic comedy and just like romance in movies. So there was a real desire for it. So I could see her filling that role. I also, if she just stays with books, I had a little bit of a weird comp, but I felt like it matched. It was like Elmore Leonard, but romance. Where it's like, I read a ton of Elmore Leonard. And when I read an Elmore Leonard, it's like an old hoodie. And I'm like, I know what I'm going to get.
Yeah.
Some gravelly people, some laconic banter, some gunfire, shoot, shoot, bang, bang, maybe a little bit of sexy stuff. And it's kind of fun. It's a good hang. And it's like, if that's what Emily Henry does, and you're just like sliding on an old reliable kind of situation, that's not a bad career to live.
It's almost, you know, to me, like an Ian Fleming sort of a situation. It's like, we're doing the thing that we do really good, and you're going to love it, and everybody's going to have a great time, and then we're going to go home.
That's right. Just like What Up With That on SNL, you know? Jason Sudeikis in the tracksuit. So, 100%. Before we go and in the episode, what was our total Vora scores?
I had a 21 out of 28.
I had a 16.
You had a 16. I had a 17.28.
Okay.
So again, Aaron hates Emily Henry the most.
I don't hate her.
And really I really do, don't you?
No, I don't. I
know the math doesn't lie, Aaron.
I know. Well,
I can't wait till we do Stephen King and Aaron's going to be like,
I don't understand math.
Aaron's going to get Stephen King like 27 out of 28. And we're going to be like, ooh.
Tough.
It's tough. It's tough out there. Okay, so I think that's our conversation, and that's going to do it for this episode of Shelf Respect.
Okay, don't forget, everything we talked about is in the show notes, and we would love to see you talk about it too. If you're listening to this as a free listener, we're so glad you're here. You can head to our Instagram at Read With Shelf Respect. We're also on Threads now with Read With Shelf Respect. The links are in the show notes. And if you are a hardback, you can continue this conversation in the comments on Patreon at patreon.com/shelfrespect.
Ask your pointed questions, declare your intentions, or start a respectful fight in the comments with one of your enemies just to eventually become lovers.
I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on the internet at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Aaron Moon. You can find me on the interwebs at Aaron H. Moon.
I'm Knox Coy. You can find me on the socials at Knox McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
The end.